this morning. I should tell you that it was Joe who spotted the Canadian flag flying upside down and brought it to my attention. Thank you very much, Joe. And obviously, virtues like modesty should be rewarded. Thank you also, Commodore Lipset, wherever you are, for the invitation to address this august society this morning. Let me say that it's generally considered bad form to publicly criticize one's country when abroad. So I'll say that this speech is more in the nature of commiseration than criticism, because our two countries share many of the same serious problems. In assessing the state of freedom in Canada today, I shall begin by issuing the following disclaimer. Canada is still one of the freest and most civilized countries on earth, despite the best efforts by governments to buy political peace with our dwindling individual freedoms. We Canadians are still relatively well off. There can be no doubt, however, that over the past several years, freedom in Canada has been diminished incrementally, virtually unnoticed by the citizenry. I believe that the fundamental threat to freedom in Canada today is something that I call ideophobia, the fear of ideas. In Canada, there is a fear by most elected conservative leaders of steadfastly staking out strong philosophical positions. Prime Minister Mulroney's problem is not that he has made tactical philosophical concessions. His problem is that he has yet to demonstrate that he has a philosophy. My assessment of freedom of Canada today is grouped into three broad areas. First, social issues. Second, foreign policy and defense. And third, economic issues. I'll start with social issues, and under that heading, we'll talk about health. In 1967, the Canadian government outlawed the provision of private basic health insurance, and today it remains the only Western country to have done so. In 1984, the House of Commons voted unanimously to pass the Canada Health Act. This act provided for severe financial penalties on provinces if they allowed doctors to bill patients more than government set fees, or if hospitals charged any kind of user fees. As a result of this act, the Ontario government passed Bill 94 in 1985, which threatened fines for doctors who charged more than the government decreed. As a result, freshman doctors are now paid exactly the same as 30-year veterans. Healthcare costs now comprise one-third of the Ontario government's total expenditures, and they are quickly increasing. The Alberta government has suggested a simple way to contain costs: cut doctors' fees by 10%. The socialist government of Manitoba suggested another solution: cut inappropriate use of hospitals, which presumably means rationing care. In British Columbia, doctors are now ordered to practice in certain areas. If they refuse, they could lose their licenses to practice. Investment in medical capital equipment is being cut back, and government is refusing to allow the private sector to supply the shortfall. In summary, you must stop Teddy Kennedy. State-sanctioned discrimination. To its shame, discrimination on the basis of race and sex was introduced by the federal conservative government in 1985, after it had been entrenched in Canada's rewritten constitution 3 years earlier. This practice is also known by the Orwellian term affirmative action, with which I believe you're already familiar. Recently, the parliamentary secretary to the Minister of Employment told the House of Commons that in August 1987, the government had adopted, quote, numerical targets for visible minority groups. Now, visible minority groups are on an equal footing with the other target groups in the public service: women, disabled persons, and Aboriginal peoples. And I just wonder rhetorically how many of you ladies like to be lumped with disabled persons. Comparable worth. Comparable worth is known as pay equity in Canada. It is, of course, discrimination. The Liberal Socialist government of Ontario imposed on the private sector the most draconian comparable worth scheme in the Western world in 1985 through the passage of Bill 154. The conservative opposition supported the bill. Under it, an anonymous tip by an employee can bring pay police into a company, where they can search, seize, and remove private records. The pay police can then force employers to pay employees the same for doing entirely different jobs based on an arbitrary evaluation. It forces companies to write and file plans to show that they have introduced comparable worth schemes. The result, of course, will be that many lower paid women will lose their jobs. The federal government also has a comparable worth scheme for the federal public sector, but it's complaint-based and so far has not done as much damage as Ontario's intrusive scheme. Universal child care programs. Following pressure by activist groups funded by government and unions and Canada's Socialist Party, the federal Conservative government recently introduced a multi-billion dollar child care scheme. The Conservatives tried to reassure their supporters by saying that their scheme, in fact, was not nearly as interventionist as the one demanded by the activists. This might remind you of something you heard on Saturday night or Friday night. As the federal government well knows, however, it's a foot in the door. Only 5 days ago, I heard Prime Minister Mulroney boast in a luncheon speech that he had appointed Sylvia Gold, a socialist activist, to head his government's advisory council on the status of women. It will be through the efforts of Ms. Gold and her ilk that state-funded child care will most likely balloon into another hugely expensive social program in coming years. Compulsory bilingualism. The English-French language issue is an extremely divisive and heated one in Canada. A recently proposed constitutional amendment deems Quebec to be a, quote, distinct society, unquote, within Canada. That province's Liberal premier said on January 25th last year that, quote, there is no question of establishing a bilingual Quebec, unquote. Through the passage of Bill 101 in Quebec, the posting of bilingual signs by private businesses has been made illegal. The signs must be posted in French only. Numerous businessmen have been fined and one jailed for breaking this language law. 1 week ago today, 25,000 French Canadians marched in Montreal to support a unilingual French Quebec. Meanwhile, the federal Conservative government recently introduced Bill C-72, which is designed to make the entire federal civil service bilingual, despite the fact that only one-fifth of Canadians have French as their mother tongue. Under Bill C-72's provisions, judges will have 5 years to become functionally bilingual. Don't laugh. You have your own bilingualism problem on the horizon, I believe, and I counsel you to treat it very seriously indeed. Foreign policy and defense issue cluster. Foreign policy. The direction of Canada's foreign policy under the present Conservative government became apparent within weeks of its 1984 election when Prime Minister Mulroney appointed one of Canada's highest profile socialists, Stephen Lewis, as Canada's ambassador to the UN. There, Lewis soon became the UN's ambassador to Canada. And my friends at Heritage know all about Stephen Lewis. Since then, expectations for a Conservative policy have gone rapidly downhill. We are still mired in a policy called constructive internationalism, which virtually amounts to third worldism run amok. It creates a state of mind where a sense of proportion in international affairs is at best warped and at worst lost entirely. This lack of proportion became startlingly clear when Prime Minister Mulroney called racial discrimination in South Africa, quote, the greatest human rights concern of our time, unquote. He apparently hadn't been told that one-third of the total population of Afghanistan had been killed or driven from the country by ruthless Soviet imperialism. This abhorrence of apartheid apparently led him to become the first Western head of government to meet with Oliver Tambo, the head of the terrorist African National Congress. The federal government's position is that Central America's upheavals are due to economic underdevelopment, not Marxist mischief. This is presumably why the government allowed Nicaragua to open a trade mission in Toronto within days of sanctions being imposed on that country by the United States. Defense policy. This is a bright spot. Defense Minister Perrin Beatty's 1987 white paper stated that East and West are divided, and I quote, on the importance of the rule of law and on the proper relationship of the individual to society. In this conflict, Canada is not...